You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It's time for Tech Talk. And yesterday we spoke to Tan Sui Yong, one of the judges for the Echelon Malaysia Satellite event. And to learn more about this event that is targeted at young entrepreneurs or techpreneurs, with me today is Colin Charles, an open source software hacker and technologist. And of course, he told me, he said, don't call me hacker. Now, before we start, explain to us exactly what you do, this open source software hacker, and what's that all about?
Hi, Frida. Thank you for having me on the show. An open source software hacker means largely I've actually spent many years, close to over a decade now, developing open source software. I've dabbled in OpenOffice.org, the Fedora project, which is basically Linux, and MySQL. I spent many years of my life on this open source database called MySQL, and now I focus on something else called MariaDB, a fork of MySQL. Ah. So it's just basically software programmer.
Okay, so there's no hacker in this?
There's nothing in where I break into your computers or anything. It's just making creative solutions.
How did you get started in this field, actually, in technology and computers?
Well, I got my first computer in 1989. It was at my grandmother's place. And it was a 4 megahertz computer, which your average calculator works much faster than today. And initially, basically started looking at basic Fortran, started programming, and started making it in the industry probably around the mid-90s when the internet started getting popular.
1989, how old were you then?
5.
Oh, you were 5? Okay. So you're involved in a lot of open source stuff. Do you think it ever be a financially lucrative field?
So I've been involved in open source since about 1998, and my mother was constantly wondering what I was doing, wasting my time on this open source thing. And no, I guess we never really thought it was financially lucrative. I was just doing it to scratch my itch. I wanted to make things better for me, and it so happened it helped other people, and eventually it became financially lucrative, so can't really complain.
And how big is the open source community now?
The open source community is a worldwide community of people that work basically everywhere. They work, they chat on IRC, they send emails to mailing lists. The community is very large. It's not really something you can count today. I think the open source community in Malaysia has been flourishing over time. I'd say we have, you know, close to maybe 1,500 people that actively engage in, you know, various different open source projects. And some of them actually building companies off it and so on. So yes, there's definitely a growth spurt in open source.
So is open source for everyone? You know, I mean, why do some people, the organizations, still prefer to be locked down to a particular vendor paying annual licenses if open source is better?
Well, some people will have no choice but to use proprietary software because they may be doing...
Names will not be mentioned.
Yeah, fair enough. So it turns out, like, if you're in the CAD space, for example, you're an architect, you've probably got no choice but to use certain software tools that are only available on proprietary software platforms. And if you're in the print space doing magazines and stuff, again, you've got to use some proprietary tools. But for most people, the average office worker, open source probably will suffice because you get, you know, free office tools, free operating system. Mm. So most people can probably use open source. And if you're in the infrastructure space, most of the successful web properties that you see are all powered by something known as a LAMP stack, which is basically Linux as the operating system, Apache as the web server, MySQL as the database, and PHP, Ruby on Rails, Python as the language of your choice.
Lovely. Fantastic. Tell us a bit some of your current projects now.
So currently I work on this fork of MySQL called MariaDB. MySQL is actually a very popular open source database. It was it is a project. Mm. Plus it was also a company that was gobbled up by Sun. It's basically powering things, you know, like Google Ads, your Facebook databases, your Twitter databases. So it's everywhere. So yeah, I work on a fork called MariaDB. I also spend a lot of time here locally in Malaysia working with the Malaysian National Computer Confederation. I'm a council member there, as well as the Technopreneurs Association of Malaysia, sort of mentoring young technopreneurs and getting them going and bootstrapping their companies. So that's basically what takes up a lot of my time these days.
Okay, and you, so out of that, you became a Sun employee when MySQL was acquired. So did you get a good deal out of the acquisition?
Yeah, this is a common question that people tend to ask, and it would be probably improper to divulge details over
that's
the
air. That's why we like to ask, because it's improper. It makes great radio.
So yeah, it turns out we had about 400 employees in about 35 countries. We sold to Sun Microsystems in January 2008 for $1 billion US.
Ah.
And I guess most of us did okay.
I was speaking to Colin Charles, an open source software technologist, about his experience of making it big in the tech industry. And in a while, we'll speak about the challenges of the Malaysian startup ecosystem. Tech Talk, BFM 89.9. You're listening to Tech Talk on Enterprise. I'm Frida Liu, and I'm here with Colin Charles, an open source software hacker slash programmer and technologist. And early on, we spoke about how he embarked on this career and some of his projects. In your opinion, what are the challenges facing the Malaysian startup ecosystem?
Thank you, Frida. Currently, I think there are a few challenges that face the Malaysian startup ecosystem, and one of them really boils down to the fact that a lot of these startups are not hungry enough. In the previous years, they were always generally depending on lots of grants. And a handout economy doesn't really work so well. If you're an entrepreneur, you need to actually know how to look for money and not know how to get money for free. So I think we need to bring back the idea of the bootstrap, in where you may run consulting to actually build your product, and you know, you actually be more successful because you've now got skin in the game. Plus, you've also, when you go to investors later, they're going to look at it and say, look, you've put 2 years of work into this, you've mortgaged your house. I think this is a company that we'd want to invest in. A lot of the entrepreneurs here, I noticed, don't really want to have much skin in the game. They just want to have some money to run with. And if the failure does happen, and you know, lots of startups do fail, if you're not pivoting fast enough, for example, they say, look, it's a loss, and it's not our loss, so it's not a big deal. so you don't have skin in the game.
Easy come, easy go.
Easy come, easy go. So that seems to be a common problem. And I think the other thing that I noticed as a sore point is that a lot of people like to localize services or just make Malaysian versions of things. And the Malaysian market, in my opinion, isn't large enough for this.
You're not like QQ in China, where there is enough of volume.
Correct. You need mass market for your products to be successful, especially if they're on the web, for example, or even mobile. And if your target market is just Malaysia, you're going to get a very niche market. So actually, I was in Singapore a while ago, and someone actually told me this very interesting thing. Use Singapore as your launch pad, but then remember that Singapore is a flight, 8-hour flight away to the rest of Asia, where you can actually, you know, become big. And I think that is something Malaysians should take away. Malaysia is just as close to Singapore. Malaysia is a good launchpad. I mean, the Klang Valley is budding with technologists. And then expand further once you've proven yourself. And flights are really cheap, you know. Exactly.
This is a different topic. So, how this is different compared to other parts of the world. In terms of the, you know, grants and waiting, is the thinking and the mentality the same, in your opinion?
Well, yes. I think grants are quite unique to Malaysia and possibly even Singapore. Many other places don't actually give you grants unconditionally. Usually they are soft loans, and I think the current direction of actually getting soft loans is the correct way, where you may have to put up some collateral. And this will also help the investor community, because you can actually now put in money and expect to get maybe, you know, a portion of the company. Previously, you would have to put in probably a lot more money in your deal flow, and you may not get the money back anyway, right? So, yeah, I think it is very different. And we should all realize that copycats alone won't work in Malaysia, because, you know, we're not like China and Vietnam, for example, where the government actively censors the internet and basically says you can't use Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare. Then you can build a local version and succeed. But, you know, here we have got freedoms.
Right. And they have the volume to justify.
And they have the volume, correct. The market size is big.
So there are a lot of factors to consider. So how does an event like Echelon help the Malaysian startup ecosystem, and where does Malaysia fit in regionally or even internationally?
So I think the launchpad event and the satellite event in Malaysia is actually a good thing, because it may encourage entrepreneurs to actually start a company. And we obviously like to promote the idea of a lean startup. Today, if you're a web-based startup or a mobile startup, you can probably get stuff done within 3 months or 100 days. There are movements all around the US and even parts of Europe now that basically say, look, you can do things within 100 days. You can launch. If you use metrics carefully, you can actually launch your product within 100 days. So, you know, from this year to next year, you have the potential to launch maybe up to 4 companies if your first 3 did fail. And maybe we'll see a lot more submissions and a lot more launches, because I think it's important to fail often, fail early, fail fast, learn from it, rather than spend a whole year invested in something and then realize, look, you know, this is not right. Pivoting is also very important. Once you realize that the metrics are not you know, agreeing to what you have thought was the correct idea and people are using it in a different way, you should be smart enough to realize, should I now pivot and do it differently?
Way.
Or should I now continue with down my path where people are not using it the same way? And I think a lot of people don't realize this. They don't realize that they should be nimble and agile enough to actually just switch to doing something else.
Basically, if you're in a hole, stop digging.
Correct.
And you're going to be one of the judges, right?
Yes.
What will you be looking for?
I'm looking for unique Malaysian startups and unique startups in Southeast Asia in general. Mm. I want to see new ideas. I want to see ideas that I think are going to make it big. I don't want to see copycats because I think they are boring and not ready for this kind of market size. So I want to see new, exciting ideas. I think the most exciting spaces currently are obviously the web and mobile. And you're starting to move towards the enterprise. Even there, getting web and mobile makes a lot of sense because people are slowly moving towards the cloud. And it's we're going to a connected society where we all carry a device that is connected to the cloud via some kind of internet connection. So something along those lines would make a lot of sense.
Okay, so when you're judging for you know, when you're making your judgment, there's sometimes people with great ideas and it works. Do you look into how you can monetize it in that process, or are you just looking for great ideas and then we'll think about monetizing it later?
No, I always look personally for great ideas that also have a monetary value. I don't believe that you should go and grab users and then focus on money later. So I do believe that, yes, if you have a great idea, you need to also figure out how to make money from it.
Mm.
And I think a lot of platforms, even Facebook, for example, knows that they can make money through ads.
But it was probably a realization much later.
It was. Initially, they just wanted to grab a huge amount of users. That is true. Because they weren't sure what exactly Facebook was.
So it could be a great idea that attracts a lot of users. And from there, you know, we'll think about monetizing. Because, like, Twitter isn't making money yet. You know?
But that's usually because venture capitalists tend to monetize based on a per-user basis.
Mm-hmm.
So it is likely that, yes, you can monetize on a per user. You can say one user is basically $3 or something. And we noticed that an Indonesian startup called Coprol, which is basically similar to Foursquare, they actually sold to Yahoo for an undisclosed sum. And that undisclosed sum basically works for, you know, per user basis. How much they can monetize based on that user.
Okay.
But it turns out that, you know, nothing has really moved in the direction I think that Yahoo was hoping for.
Okay. I wonder what that undisclosed amount was, but I guess. So I guess between you and Swee Yong, you'll be the Simon Cowell version in terms of your judging style. So good luck with the event that's happening. Of course, I've been speaking to Colin Charles, and he's an open source software programmer and technologist. And you can find a little bit more about Echelon, the satellite event, at echelon.com, which is happening on the 21st of April in Kuala Lumpur. And tomorrow in Tech Talk, Matt Armitage from culturepop.com, and together with tech maestro Jeff Asandu for Geek Squawk. And up next, here's John Barleycorn, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station.